Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, 2014 is still a ways away, but from what we've already seen this week with the Rick Perry announcement that he's not running for re-election, decisions are being made about who is getting in and who is getting out of different races. And once again, the Sarah Palin speculation is back, thanks to Sean Hannity, who was talking to her about a number of issues that she's been involved in recently, including the idea of a third party if the Republicans don't straighten up on immigration and a couple of other things. But he threw the Senate question out there. Democrat Mark Begich is up in 2014, and here's how that went.
Well, there's been talk you might run for senator in Alaska. Have you considered that at all?
I've considered it because people have requested me considering it. But I'm still waiting to see, you know, what the lineup will be.
And she went on to say, Jim, that she's hoping that there's going to be some new blood in the race. It doesn't sound like it's something that she would like to do, but it might be something that she feels like she needs to do. So let the speculation begin. She certainly threw out different hints at different times in the lead-up to 2012 that she might get in that race. Obviously, ultimately, she didn't. But she's going to get plenty of political attention until she finally says yes or no here.
Somewhere in Alaska, Joe Miller's head perks up at his television at that moment. Wait, what'd you say? You know. I thought I was her favorite there. So Joe Miller had been making some noises about running again. He came obviously very close to beating Murkowski. Murkowski had a write-in bid back in 2010. At times I've written very nice things about Sarah Palin. At times I've written things that are critical of Sarah Palin. I would really like to see her get back in the game, so to speak, as a candidate. And I think that she obviously would have a good shot in this race. The current polling has her well behind the incumbent Democrat. I have a feeling if she actually got in, those numbers would change a little. I think people, you know, might kind of be dismissing it as a hypothetical. Also worth noting that Begich will not have any support of Organizing for Action. Or at least that's what they're saying, because he didn't vote the way the Obama administration wanted on the gun background check bill. I think if she gets in, obviously she'll have a bazillion dollars in terms of fundraising. Enormous grassroots excitement and activism and all that stuff. So I think if nothing else, it's a 50-50 race, and she makes the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee have to spend oodles and oodles of money to protect their incumbent Democrat. I also think that there's kind of been this, you know, atmosphere around Palin that, well, she's still a major player. She could win if she ran, but she just chose not to run last time around. She's still enormously influential and popular. Well, this would be where the rubber meets the road, and we would kind of see whether Sarah Palin still is a popular, influential figure, or whether she has kind of, her time has come and gone. And I think if you can't win a statewide race in your home state, then maybe you are not quite a major player anymore, which is one of the reasons I'm a little skeptical that she actually will run. We all know that, you know, throughout the run-up to 2012, there was obviously a lot of hints, a lot of comments that suggested she might run. And then, much to the surprise of a lot of supporters, she announced she was not going to run. And then occasionally she'd make comments that said, well, it's not too late for folks to jump in. So, you know, suggesting she seemed at times like a tease that, you know, she might talk about running, but ultimately she wasn't. I think that if you have the populist charisma that she has, that it is largely wasted giving weekly commentaries on Fox News or doing reality shows on the Learning Channel and all that other stuff. In other words, if you want to influence politics, it helps to be in a policy position. And this is something I've said back when Jim DeMint left the Senate to go head up the Heritage Foundation. I'm a little tired of conservative leaders saying, hey, you know what, I can do a lot more outside the elected office, because we need conservative leaders in elected office. That's why you're seeing this excitement about Liz Cheney potentially running in Wyoming for the Senate race there. I'm a little skeptical of this idea that the greatest way to help the conservative cause is with a regular lucrative gig on Fox News. And speaking as a pundit who'd like to have one of those regular lucrative gigs, I'd really like to see the elected officials get out of those positions and, you know, open up some slots for the rest of us. Now, so we will see. I'd love to see her run. I think she'd have a good chance of winning. I think she would make a lot of liberals' heads explode. But if you're skeptical about this, if you have a feeling this is just another usual open speculation and it won't actually generate an actual senatorial bid, your skepticism is pretty well founded. We'll have to wait and see whether this turns into something. But also notice how much she would be a lightning rod diverting criticism from any other Republican running in the 2014 class.
We'll see. It's always good fodder, and I'm sure Chris Matthews' spittle will be hitting the teleprompter today as he contemplates the idea of Sarah Palin on the Senate floor. All right, on to martini number two now. And each day we've been chronicling the moribund economy that we're currently living through. First, it was an analysis of last Friday's job numbers. Yesterday, we were talking about the 101 million Americans on federal food assistance, which now exceeds the number of Americans working full-time in the private sector. Now, new numbers from the Pew Institute suggest that the economy is responsible for driving down the national birth rate to one of its lowest points in history. The article is a little bit confusing because it says it's an all-time low, and then it says it's the lowest since 1998. But either way, just since 2007, which is obviously the year before the financial crisis began, things have dropped dramatically. There are now 63.2 births per 1,000 women age 15 to 44. It was 69.3, and that's obviously, when you add up all the women in the country, that's a lot. There's now just over 4 million being born each year, about a drop of about 300,000 in just the past 5 years. And the analysis is that people aren't committing to having children as long as they're very skittish on whether they're going to have a job and whether they think the economy is going to pick up anytime soon. Jim, that's obviously not exactly showing a lot of optimism on the part of the American people.
I talk about this in the Morning Jolt today in the context of a long, detailed, and in my humble opinion, very fun discussion of the 1994 classic film Reality Bites. And it's mostly about the perceptions of Generation X depicted in that film, and also in a lot of the coverage and discussion of when Generation X, generally defined as people born from the early 60s to the early 80s, when they entered the workforce, the mockery or the criticism of Generation X back in the early 90s, sounds kind of like what you hear about Generation Y today and also the millennials. You know, they're lazy. They got an education, but they're not ambitious. They don't have drive. They're whiners, etc. And now there was a very nice study by a bank about looking at Generation X and where they are today in 2013. And the answer is that most of them turned out okay, that they grew up and got to work. And, you know, most of them are working full time. A lot of 82% are homeowners. 74% have children. 70% are married. 66% have a 401k. You know, it's surprising to me, 29% reported making $100,000 or more. I allude to this, that if you're going to be conservative, you have to have something you want to conserve. If you have a high income, you're more likely to be concerned about income taxes. If you're a homeowner, you're more likely to be concerned about property taxes. If you have kids, you're a little bit more worried about what's going on in the schools and the culture and what's on television and what kind of values are being instilled to your kids. Generally, the experiences of life, of moving up the income ladder, of getting married, of having kids, of becoming a homeowner, these are generally things that make you more conservative over time. And yes, of course, you can find, you know, old people who are not conservative, and obviously you can find some young people who are conservative, but generally, the aging process kind of, you know, beats some of that youthful idealism out of you, some of that liberalism and, you know, theoretical ideas you thought that sounded so great when you're in college sitting around your dorm room. And you turn it to your parents, basically. No matter how much you pledged, you weren't going to do that. Now, Generation Y should be able to start this process, but because of the Great Recession, they can't. They're living with their parents in much higher numbers, much more likely to be unemployed, certainly not likely to have retirement savings, certainly less likely to be homeowners. And as we saw in these numbers, much less likely to become parents. And these are kind of this culture of this perpetual adolescence, which I think, you know, people on the right they're right to complain about. I think there's a lot of pessimism and almost kind of bitter sneering about young people today. And I don't think it's necessarily the case. I think if Generation Y was given the opportunity that you saw created by the economy of the 1990s, particularly the dot-com boom, that they would get real jobs, they would move out of their parents' house, they would become more likely to get married and have kids and quote-unquote grow up, and they might be shifting over towards the right. So at this point, the Obama administration is actually benefiting from the lousy economy that they have presided over for the past 4 to 5 years.
On to martini number three now, Jim. And given news like that, we need a good laugh. So here we go. This is straight from thehill.com. Two House Democrats have proposed legislation that would establish a national historic park on the surface of the moon to mark where the Apollo missions landed between 1969 and 1972. The bill from Representatives Donna Edwards, Democrat of Maryland, and Edie Bernice Johnson, Democrat Texas, would create the Apollo Lunar Landing Sites National Historic Park. The park would be comprised of all artifacts left on the surface of the moon from the Apollo 11 through Apollo 17 missions. The bill says these sites need to be protected because of the anticipated increase in commercial moon landings in the future. Here's the most interesting part. Under the legislation, the park would have to be established no later than 1 year after the bill passes and would be run jointly by the Department of the Interior as well as NASA. And it does boost funding for NASA in the bill as well. So, Jim, pretty ambitious there. Does this mean Newt Gingrich was right about the moon colony?
Remember Newt Gingrich was a nut job because of this, right? You know, and Newt's, you know, idea of a moon colony really was based on the best traditions of NASA and the, you know, the moon landing and the space program. I think a lot of people looking back on the moon landing as one of the great achievements in human history. I kind of look at our space program since then and kind of feel like, yeah, we have this International Space Station, we have the space shuttle, and we have a couple Mars landers. But what are we really doing? Aren't we supposed to be, you know, whatever happened to the new frontier and the great era of exploration and, you know, boldly going where no man has gone before, to quote Star Trek? So it would be great to see that sort of thing. This idea from these two Democratic Congress ladies seems even kind of nuttier. like you know, at least, you know, there was this great era of, hey, let's explore the universe with Newt. With these ladies, it's let's preserve where we were before. My first thought, Greg, by the way, I mean, you know, you talk about national parks. Maintenance on this one is going to be a bitch, you know. just getting up there and, you know, putting the signs and the usual roping it off and all that kind of stuff, you know. The day we're worried about moon condos destroying the landscape where Neil Armstrong walked, yeah, okay, all right, we should worry about that. And I guess you could say, for once, we could credit Democratic congresswoman for being farsighted, you know, for looking around the curve and all that kind of stuff. But it almost seems like a parody of open space preservation bills, because really I'm not that worried about some billboard going up right next to where that – although if you could put a billboard up there. Is it Richard Branson is the guy at Virgin Atlantic?
Yes.
If he manages to put a Virgin billboard right next to the flag on the moon, you know what? He can keep it. Really, go ahead. If you're willing to put that much effort into it, go right ahead. So I suppose at some point this will be a problem we need to worry about. On the other hand, the fact that Newt got mocked for a week and this has gone largely unnoticed says something about the way the narrative setting of our national media and how – what kind of how much the media is willing to go to protect certain Democratic members of Congress to not look silly?
I guess my next question is do we own the moon? I know we're the only ones who have been there, so I guess we can claim it for ourselves. But once all these commercial landing crafts line up like they're at JFK or LaGuardia, is there going to be a major territorial fight on the surface of the moon? That could get ugly too.
It could be ugly. It could also get awesome, Greg. You know, finally, Star Wars. And honestly, you talk about do we own the moon, I'm willing to quote the Spartans. Come and take it, okay? Maybe I shouldn't say that loudly, because China might say, okay.
Get in the car, kids. We're headed to the moon park. We'll be back in a month. Fascinating. Jim, have a great day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.